And there's a line in the next poem about mainly feeling safe in alleys. Does that describe you? And also, could you speak to the autobiographical nature of Filthy Jerry?
Okay, so the next one is possibly the least autobiographical one, All Things Winged and Waiting. It's also the oldest piece in the book. I wrote a very early version of this in 2006, actually, and had always liked the idea, and it sort of knocked around, and I found it again and thought it would work for this book. The idea of mainly safe in alleys is, it's this idea that everybody has a set of things or areas or situations they're confident in, and then everyone has a set of fears or phobias or insecurities, be they reasonable or not. In this poem, obviously, it's about dinosaurs because that's fun. Like, I like the idea of taking an idea like that and outsizing it a little bit. But for myself, alleys are fine, you know, but the idea of mainly feeling safe in alleys, or I guess in the larger sense of hidden off places or what have you, I think probably used to be truer than it is now. Mm-hmm. I've learned to be more comfortable in places that aren't necessarily catering just to me. Mm-hmm. As long as I can get to a place where I feel absolutely at home, where I know the people and I like the music, every now and then I feel like I can navigate better than I used to. And part of that's just growing up. When you're in your 20s or teens, you really wear an identity, like, with a fist shake.
Yeah. The Richard Hugo House was one of the places that was in your youth and, you know, up until recently, continues to be a place where you get nourishment. You're hanging around with poets. It helps you keep your hand in it and be connected. So talk to us about the Richard Hugo House and maybe some other places that were important for you growing up and in your writing life.
Richard Hugo House wasn't as great. I first started going there as a teenager to their Stage Fright open mic. So that was my first open mic experience, was reading there. And the first thing I read, I was wearing a hat that had horns on it, and I read a take on the Fuzzy Wuzzy Was a Bear it ended traumatically somehow. I don't know. But, that was obviously like a self-defense thing, because it's like, oh, if I read this crazy, ridiculous thing, then people will laugh and I'll be fine. But I went there for quite a while until I moved to Bellingham, and even some after going to Bellingham. But the Hugo House, when I came back from Wales, I got involved with the Zine Archive Project, and that helped connect me to some of the people making art on their own terms here in Seattle. And then I was a bartender at the Hugo House, and so I would see a lot of the readings and a lot of the events and meet a lot of people. The first time I saw you read was with Jarrett Middleton for Undantum to My Early. I didn't say that right.
Two people left because they were offended by American sentences. And you can only imagine why. That's interesting, because for me, the community was Red Sky Poetry Theater. And that mm-hmm. happened not far from where the Hugo House is, in the former Globe Cafe. And an interesting thing happened to me one time after an edition of Red Sky. Marion Kimes said to me, "Paul Nelson, can I ask you a question? What is your commitment to beauty?"
Your commitment to beauty?
Yeah. So I ask you that. Do you have such a commitment? I mean, every poet should, was the implication.
I do have a commitment to beauty, but I think my definition of beauty probably has a different line of thinking behind it than a lot of people's. I think that, you're talking to a guy who listens to music known as noise rock, that a lot of people are just like, oh my gosh, can you put on something less obnoxious? But I think...
The Melvins, an example of that?
The Melvins would be an example, yeah. I love the Melvins. But I think that working to create something that is beautiful in what it accomplishes, whether or not you're trying to accomplish something that is traditionally seen as beautiful, like a painting of a mountain or whatnot, or a love poem, for instance, These things are beautiful, but I don't think they have the monopoly on beauty. I think that almost anything can be beautiful, but it's not inherently. Like, the way that you approach something or render it, and sometimes the beauty of a poem or the beauty of a story or what have you is in the truth that it tells. Like, you might be saying something really ugly, admitting to something really ugly, or bringing up emotions that people don't always want brought up. But if you're telling the truth, and you're being honest, and you're being self-aware, there's a beauty in that.
What are you working on now?
I'm working on revising a collection I had actually before Filthy Jerry's Guide to Parking Lots, called The Third Best of All Possible Outcomes. I had a whole stack of poems, and some of them are a few years old now, and I still love, and some are a few years old now, and I don't like at all. So I'm sort of hammering that out, as well as just trying to write new things. I'm working on some short stories as well.
Do you have an online presence besides Facebook?
I do, actually. You can find me at www.somewhereincolorado.blogspot.com. You can also find frequent updates on my life and work at the Babel Salvage website. They do a very good job of representing their authors in that way. So babelsalvage.com, BabelSalvage.com. And I'm on Twitter as well, which is in some ways a better way than Facebook to keep abreast of just events and things that are going on, because the information is streamlined and there are fewer pictures of cats.
How about picking out a poem to end the show with here?
Okay. I think we were talking about Richard Hugo earlier, and I think I'm going to read All Things Return to the Dusty Liquor Shelf, which is after Richard Hugo's Death of the Capucin Tavern. This poem doesn't need much of an intro, but a lot of the book was written while I was working at this failing bar, living in this really rundown apartment across from a lot of sort of urban semi-decay to decay. And so this is the last one this was one of the last ones I wrote for the book, because it was when the bar was closing. So All Things Return to the Dusty Liquor Shelf. I can't edge the questions out with sound. The red walls sticking cables out for repoed televisions, those corners used to hold a gaze. The remote's still here with batteries next to the internet jukebox. Every bottle two shots away from empty, except the extra vodka. I used to have excuses at the ready. New shipment on Tuesday, repairman tomorrow. Now we are just running things out, and a slow head shake is all I muster. Have you heard the one about the bar that ran out of beer? You're about to. Friday stalwarts hold up their end of the bargain, staying for another quick drink, a song, compromising selection for support. The karaoke host cracks jokes about microphone Viagra to keep us all in wry grins, at least. The mermaid painted windows looking sad or drunk or both, but haven't they always? Two or three first timers show, query about why no taps, beer spouts in first stages of rust. Nothing dies slower than a scene. The old man who comes and leaves alone, ready to sing us some Humperdinck, does so tonight. Evening edges on to 1 a.m., and still some singers treading the soft crunch of abandoned straws into the carpet. As engines zoom louder on down the arterial, someone asks when they'll see me again.
Graham, I really appreciate your work. I appreciate all that you contribute to the local literary community, and I wish you continued success.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks for having me. I can say the same to you.
I want to thank Spring Street Center for the use of the house to record this, and more information on the websites we'll have online as well.